Digital 410 Media proudly presents the What's the Scuttlebutt podcast with your hosts, Don Abernathy, Jeff Copsetta, and Dennis Blocker.
Welcome, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the What's the Scuttlebutt podcast, your favorite World War II-based podcast, and we are back together live. Not live. Well, we're live, but you guys are hearing us post-live. But we're back together as a group, I should say, and we have a great guest. But before we get to the guest, because we don't want to stop the interview once we get this wheels rolling, because we're all excited to promote this book and to talk to this author, I have a mail call I just want to read real quick. As you guys know, a while back, I found a photo, because I was converting or remastering an interview I did with a gentleman who flew a plane, a B-27, and that one of the members on his crew named that plane Anytime Annie. And so I was looking for a photo of Anytime Annie, and I came across a photo that I actually bought on eBay, and I did a quick TikTok on it and threw it up on YouTube Short, and Mr. David saw this, and he commented on the video, and I thought it was great. I am thrilled to find your 1 minute and 53 second video and the photo of B-17 number 42-107032, a.k.a. Anytime Annie. Yeah, he knows more information I put in that video. It was that very plane, according to records, ran out of fuel on the return trip after a bomb run over Germany and was ditched in the North Sea on May 13, 1944. The pilot was my uncle, Henry E. Hansen Jr. from Chippewa Bay, New York. And all of his crew members were rescued after Uncle Henry surfed that flying fortress across the Whitecaps. This was his 23rd mission. He and his crew were part of the 367th Bomb Squadron of the 306th Bomb Group stationed at Turley Field, England. He went home after 25 missions in July of 1944, then returned to fly 25 more with his first child, my cousin Elaine, being born the day he flew number 50. How about that? So Anytime Annie is somewhere off the east coast of Great Britain on the bottom of the Northern Sea. Because the gentleman I interviewed was talking about how they flew Anytime Annie, and then it got taken away to be upgraded with the newer equipment, and then they just got a new plane with a new name. And so that was great that a family member saw my little photo that I posted up on the internet.
That's cool.
Jeff, you had a group you wanted to... give a shout out to some cool patchwork they do, correct?
Yeah, I've got a couple promos, and we're going to make it short because we're really excited about our guest today. But first, if you're in downtown Buda, Texas, it's just outside of Austin. There is an incredible, it's one of the most unique World War II museums I've ever been to. And here's why. It's basically, it's nestled right in the middle of a World War II themed mini golf course. That's right. It is literally fun for the whole family because every hole goes in chronological order of campaign starting in Hitler's Blitzkrieg in 1939 to the road to victory in 1945 on hole 18. Every hole, there's an informational panel. They're dedicated. Each hole is dedicated to a veteran who served in that battle, in that campaign. The AstroTurf is, you know, all different colors to represent. Maybe you're on the deck of the Arizona at Pearl Harbor, or you're with the Mighty Eighth. There's life-size pictures of the flag raising at Suribachi and Tuskegee Airmen and Rosie the Riveter. And you go all throughout this course. Several artifacts are also integrated into it. And it's the biggest little museum at the end that you're going to go through. It's a one-room museum. But, man, let me tell you, the amount of artifacts, the quality... there's so much in there. The diversity of the artifacts that you'll see is just second to none. It's called the Memorial Mini Golf and Museum in Buda, Texas. And so when it comes to the patches, I got to throw a shout out here to Mr. Johnson. He reached out to me through social media, and I told him I'd do him a little favor here because it looks like he has really got the market. If you are in need of a custom painted leather, any kind of an insignia, squadron, bomb group patch for your bomber jacket, this is the guy. He doesn't have a website, so you got to get to him through Facebook. And the title of his page is Leather Squadron and Group, etc. Patches World War II era and latter. So it's not just World War II, it's World War II and beyond. Custom leather artwork, he doesn't have anything in stock, he paints everything to order. There's nothing sitting on the shelf, so make sure you go to his Facebook page and check out John Signer's Leather Squadron and Group patches. Man, now we can talk with our guest today. Mayor Bamanya, it's really, truly an honor to get to introduce you today. And you're just, I mean, there's so much that you've been involved in, so many accomplishments. And I'm going to let you talk about them. But if you could, sir, my very first question, or to lead into this conversation today, could you start at the beginning? Where did this all start? Did it start with your service in the military? Was it prior to that? How do you get to the point where you are now, author of several books, producing movies, advising for some of the top war films that we've seen? Where did it all begin for you, sir?
Okay, you're way too nice. I can't top the golf course, so I'm going to hang up now and come back next month.
I told him to save that for the end of the show, but, you know, here we are.
Anyway, you guys are way too nice. And by the way, thanks for having me on. I am more honored to be on, so it's very nice. I can keep it really short. I know time, you know, like anything else, we have limited amounts of it. But, you know, my dad was Iranian, my mom German, immigrated to California when I was little, went to school. My dad was sick throughout, and he made me promise not to join the military because he always said Americans are crazy, they'll go to war. Little did he know. But anyway, so when my father passed, I finished my four-year degree, and then I went into the 2nd Ranger Battalion for 2 years as a machine gunner, the worst job you can possibly have as a grunt. Well, maybe mortars. And back in the day, recoilless rifles were terrible too. But didn't go to Ranger school. It was during the time when we had all these budget cuts, and then they had a program eventually called Green to Gold, where you could leave active duty, sign up again and go to ROTC. But I had gone basically my basic advanced infantry training airborne school was done at Fort Benning. I went through the 3-4 week Ranger indoctrination program at Benning, broke my ankle parachuting, hung out at the head shed, got tortured, low crawled every inch, I think, on that compound, went through my second Ranger indoctrination program, got my teeth kicked in for being too motivated. I ended up at 2nd Ranger Battalion, Bravo Company, which was actually really great, I will say that. And first sergeant looked at me and he's like, you're a giant, you know, at 6'2". I probably weighed 180, 190 at the time, something like that. He said, here's a machine gun. So that's how I became a machine gunner, by my size, really more than anything else. I went on to sign up for Green to Gold after 2 years. Played soccer after 1 year, got injured badly, and got medicaled out. 2 years later, I tried to get back in for First Desert Storm there, first Gulf War, and they wouldn't take me in, so I didn't pass the medical. Damn it. But anyway, so that's ended my military career. And then I did retail for a while, and that was horrible. I got wiped out by a big fire in Oakland. I had like 7 stores in the San Francisco, Oakland, Berkeley Bay area. Got wiped out. FEMA didn't help me much at that time. It's also a lot of money, really, when you have 7 stores. So I decided I love movies. I love all these books. You know, I enlisted because I read all these military books. And when I went to the recruiter, I wanted to enlist in Special Forces, Green Berets, because I spoke German fluently. And they're like, we only take prior service guys. But how about these Rangers? I'm like, Rangers, that's right, LERPs, Vietnam, you know, I've read all this crap, you know, wonderful stuff, really love those guys. And so I went to the Ranger battalion, but little did I know it became a light infantry unit, right? It was no longer 4 to 6 guys behind enemy lines. So it's kind of a joke was on me there, but still formative. I still talked to some of the guys, you know, I was active for a little while with the associations and things like that. But fast forward, retail shop, I get basically burned out of business. And I'm like, I got nothing else to do. Let's go to Hollywood. Make movies. I love movies, idiot. And, you know, overall, it was interesting. I stayed away as much as I could from tech advising because you get pigeonholed very quickly. I know you had Dale Dye on. And I'm sure he could have told you all about that. So I acquired a lot of properties, you know, including, like I said, a Marine Corps book on Korea, with the old breed, other things. And, you know, I tried to make my way there. And on occasion, I would do a little bit of tech advising. But I primarily passed that on to other people. So I did tech advise a little bit on Black Hawk Down for Harry Humphreys, who was a Navy SEAL, who handled all of Jerry Bruckheimer, the producer, all his films. Worked on that for a little while. I worked on We Were Soldiers once in Young for a couple of weeks until they said, you're not in the union, get lost. So I got lost. But I had the good fortune of doing The Good German, which is that the right way? No, it's the wrong way. That's George Clooney's hero uniform back there. So that was a lot of fun. And I tried to produce and I sort of ended up writing a little bit. But what had happened is I'd done all this research on Black Hawk Down. And the Rangers who had been there from Bravo Company 3rd Ranger Battalion were really awesome. A lot of them came, sent me pictures. You know, I even talked to guys from 10th Mountain Division who are medics, and they sent me pictures. And I compiled a list of all the images. I compiled a database of all the Rangers with their phone numbers, email addresses, passed it on to production. And eventually they didn't take me with them to Morocco to film. And that's perfectly fine. So I was a bit annoyed. I had done all this work and I had all these images and I'm like, now what? So I just reached out to a publisher in the UK online, early days, you know, when online just kind of started. And they hired me to write an article, which didn't get published. And then I sort of on occasion would write a book as I was trying to make it in Hollywood. So, you know, I'd written, I think this is my 5th Ranger book now. And I cover anything from ancient through modern stuff. I think the book before this was on Second Bat Boy in Jiwat in Afghanistan, Iraq, which I think was a great book, actually. So I've been in that. And when I got out, I stayed with associations, you know, Ranger associations. I was on the board of directors. So I did things like that. And Hollywood was really interesting, but also very tough, very challenging, you know. So unless you know people or you have a lot of money or you have that hot property that everybody wants, it's a grinder there. So,
and sometimes and being passed, in the environment where it's people constantly just trying to step over each other to get up on, it's just, it can be very, very tiring.
Absolutely. It's true. You know, I don't want to be too bitter about it, but I can get very bitter about this very quickly. But there were some great people. I still talk to some. Oddly enough, I still have one or two projects, in development over there that who knows what will happen 20 years when I'm dead now, you know, they'll probably make it. But so I had a great time, but the writing started really because I worked on Black Hawk Down. I had all this information, all this material. And so I started to develop this relationship with one publisher. And on occasion, I'd write a book. And it was always about the grunt, the infantry guy. You know, I never really cared about the Navy. No offense, just never did. Didn't care about Air Force. I was always interested in the Babylonian infantrymen, you know, fighting against whoever, to the doughboy, you know, dog face, jarhead, whatever. I've always been interested in the ground pounder, you know, and that's why I joined the infantry ultimately anyway, because that's what I knew. So I wrote a little bit here and there, tried to do Hollywood, and then I got a bit sick of Hollywood after a while.